Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Jorge Salazar. The challenges posed by climate change, rising sea level, heat waves, droughts, coastal flooding, severe weather, diseases, these require a radical rethinking of environmentalism. That's according to Michael Schellenberger and Ted Nordhaus, who gained notoriety with their essay called The Death of Environmentalism. Up next, they talk about their new book, Breakthrough, From the Death of Environmentalism to the Politics of Possibility. Here's Michael Schellenberger and Ted Nordhaus. The first half of the interview begins with Michael Schellenberger. What is the breakthrough that you refer to in your book?
The argument that we make in the book is that the environmental movement was really constructed around a politics of limits. And both Ted and I have worked in the environmental movement our entire professional lives. And in 2004, just before the elections, we interviewed the country's national environmental leaders and asked them about what we were going to do to deal with global warming. And in the process, we really came to the conclusion that global warming was a very different challenge than the pollution problems that we faced in the past. So whereas acid rain required putting some scrubbers on smokestacks, dealing with smog required catalytic converters on tailpipes, global warming really requires replacing our entire energy infrastructure. It's not just regulating pollution. We have to create a whole new clean energy economy. And in order to do that, we have to not have a politics of limits, but we need a politics of possibility. And that is a politics aimed not at so much at constraining human activities, but really unleashing human power and human potential. And so the breakthrough refers to really breaking free from that older pollution paradigm and politics of limits into a new politics of possibility. And it also refers to the fact that we just are going to need to make a whole set of breakthroughs in terms of the technologies that we're going to need to bring down the price of clean energy as quickly as possible.
You've written about this fundamental need for public investment in clean energy, $300 billion over 10 years.
Well, one of the things that we point out is that, well, we've traditionally, those of us that came of age in the environmental movement, we, for a long time, and really for most of my career, we looked at global warming like it's a really big pollution problem. That would be solved like we solved pollution problems in the past, right, through regulatory limits on pollution. But what we discovered is that among energy experts, that's not the model that they believe is going to get us to a clean energy economy as quickly as we need to get to it. So really the model that we've looked to in the book is past strategies for technology innovation. And there's this sort of hidden history that most Americans don't really know about or have forgotten about, which is that really faced with new challenges on economic development or national security, the U.S. government has made very large investments into infrastructure and technology. So think about the railroads after the Civil War or the interstate highway system after World War II. And one of our favorite examples is that in the late 50s and early 60s, the Defense Department decided that it needed microchips to fuel the kind of computers they needed to deal with the Soviet threat. And what they ended up doing is they basically guaranteed the market for microchips. They bought a huge amount of microchips in a short period of time, and the price of a microchip in just a few years went from $1,000 to $20. And there's a very powerful metaphor here. Microchips are made out of silicon, so are solar panels. Every time you double the production of solar panels, the price comes down 20%. It's sort of the Moore's Law of solar panels. We point out that, you know, the experts say that it would cost somewhere between $50 and $200 billion to bring the price of solar down to the price of coal. And, you know, we point out that that's probably the cheapest $200 billion we've ever spent. I mean, to really get free from coal and oil and to be moving towards, you know, a new economy in terms of the job creations, the profits, the national revenue, you know, and the benefits in terms of national security for the United States and other countries, including China and Europe, would really be quite astronomical. So that's the argument. There's no silver bullet, so it's not just solar. Of course, we have to invest in a range of technologies. There's energy efficiency. There's trying to capture carbon and store it. There's wind. All of those technologies need much larger investments. And the $300 billion number actually comes from our review of the expert literature. you know, one of the things that we think is really important to get to make a big investment in is in the new energy sciences, and that after World War II and during the Cold War, the U.S. government invested a huge amount of money into scholarships for the computer sciences, for the information sciences, and really gave rise to Silicon Valley. You know, Google literally would not exist if it hadn't been for those big investments in the computer sciences, places like Stanford. You know, computers would not exist had we not made these big investments in microchips. There's a very important role for scientists, in particular for young scientists, in these new energy sciences. And I would just say that, you know, we really look forward to, you know, working with scientific leaders and others to really make the case for this major national commitment and investment into clean energy.
For the second half of the interview, I asked Ted Nordhaus about what he calls the narrative of overcoming.
We contrast the narrative of overcoming with the narrative of tragedy and of having fallen from nature. And we argue that at sort of the heart of environmentalism philosophically is the idea that humans have fallen from nature, that our efforts to kind of control nature are the source of our problems. And this really goes back to sort of Rachel Carson in Silent Spring and arguably well before that. This idea that because we have sort of fallen from a harmonious nature and we've sort of fallen out of a harmonious relationship with nature, we're being punished with ecological crisis. And we suggest that this is just an unscientific view of humanity and nature. We are as natural as anything else on the planet. We are a species that, in fact, has thrived. There are now 7 billion of us living on the planet, and more of us than ever live healthy, free lives, are in control of our own lives and who we want to be and how we want to live. And that only sort of continues to grow, the number of people who live in this way. And those are, in fact, good things. We live longer, we're healthier, we have greater freedom. We should celebrate that. The narrative of overcoming, as opposed to the narrative of tragedy, is a view of humanity that is positive, that is optimistic, that is future-oriented, rather than being nostalgic, complaint-based, and seeing humans as a cancer on the planet. And we think that these are the kind of ethics, and this is the kind of philosophy that will sort of inspire us to innovate, to invent, and to create a new economy and a better future for all 7 billion of us who live on the planet today.
One last question, I'll let you go. Thank you so much. I'd like to talk about population. You've written that that 7 billion people alive today is a sign of success and not failure. What did you mean by that?
Well, what we mean is that it's a sign of a very successful species that has succeeded in propagating itself all over the planet in large numbers. I mean, it's ironic that the folks who sort of tend to be most focused on this are among the wealthiest, most comfortable human beings to have ever set foot on the planet. And they're not talking about limiting their own population. They're mostly talking about limiting populations of black and brown people around the world. And our view is just completely the opposite, that there are more than enough resources to go around. There's more than enough energy to go around if we invent and we innovate and we make the kinds of big long-term social investments that we need to make not only here in America, but at a global level.
That was Michael Schellenberger and Ted Nordhaus on their book, Breakthrough, From the Death of Environmentalism to the Politics of Possibility. I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.